Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's editor. Canadian author Mary Jane Mafini is the writer of three ongoing mystery series at novel length, but she is also a stellar short story writer who has won Canada's Arthur Ellis Award for Best Short Story twice. The story she and author James Lincoln Warren read for this new episode in our podcast series is her 2010 EQMM tale, So Much in Common. The story recently won the Malice Domestic Convention's Agatha Award for Best Short Story and is currently nominated for this year's Anthony and Arthur Ellis Awards.
So Much in Common by Mary Jane Mafini. Luck was with her that day, or Willa Bennington might never have encountered Cliff and Leanne Capshaw at the Town Centre Gourmet. How fortuitous they rounded the corner into personal grooming products, just as Willa collapsed with a sharp intake of breath. Their large, handsome faces creased with concern as Willa bit her lower lip and gripped the metal-edged shelf. The well-dressed man offered his arm and support, while his stylish wife gathered up Willa's spilt purchases. Following instructions, Willa said, "It's my worn-out hip. I feel like such a dithery old fool." That was true enough. Usually Willa was the one who rushed in to assist people in need, but Cliff's fine wool suit and the large opal and diamond ring gracing Leanne's finger confirmed that they had everything they needed. "You must put your feet up," Leanne said, guiding Willa to the front of the store. Willa grimaced. "It will take more than that. I'm waiting for a hip replacement," Cliff said. "Too darn hot in this supermarket for such a heavy coat. No wonder you tumbled, little lady." Willa appreciated that explanation. The cashmere topper was a bit much, even for the frozen foods section. "I must say, I mind the winters." Willa's hands trembled as she paid for her boneless chicken, orange juice, and frozen peas. When Arnold and Molly were alive, she'd often bought Bromelake ducks to serve Shanghai style. That remained her favorite image, fresh and crisp as if those dinners had been yesterday. The three of them at Willa's table, elbows on the damask cloth, guzzling rosé, howling with laughter, to hell with Emily Post. They'd have to wash their sticky hands before moving on to the Armagnac. So much in common, such good friends. But it had been 722 days since Arnold's funeral, and 680 since Molly's. Now Willa ate grilled chicken for one, with never a whiff of rosé. The cashier was all smiles. No doubt it was the warm, concerned brown of Leanne's eyes and Cliff's broad expanse of teeth. Such attractive people. Cliff's sandy hair shot with silver and Leanne's dark, fashionably angled bob, so right for her statuesque figure. Willa had been coming to the Town Centre Gourmet for years, yet that wretched girl had never once smiled at her. Cliff and Leanne wouldn't hear of her driving herself at home. What were neighbors for? Not that they were actual neighbors, living on the far side of the river in a new gated community. Willa appreciated the pretense. Cliff said, "Close enough." Leanne said, "Is there anyone to look after you?" "I'll be fine." Willa resolved to control the tremor in her voice. "A neighbor," Leanne said. "No one I care to deal with." She managed to produce a small, brave smile. "We'll take care of you, hun." Cliff promised to get Willa's ancient Audi home safely, while Leanne ferried Willa in their obviously new Cadillac. Willa had always appreciated caddies, especially glossy black ones. Of course, she'd driven them as a young woman. She'd loved the way they handled, smooth, responsive, and the look she got swooping around town. After all, Daddy had owned the dealership. Those had been the good old days. Leanne took Willa's tiny hands with her large, splendidly manicured ones. "We will make things better." Willa brightened. "Oh, I believe it."
Detective Sergeant Joe Kelly glowered across the desk at his longtime partner. "Just a matter of time until these creeps victimize someone else," Bill Jamison said. 12 friggin' days until your pension kicks in, you gotta let it go. The Carsons are ancient history. Can't just stand by and let them do it again. You assigned to the Carson case? There's no case, you know that. Just a tip, they're operating in the area again. Here's another tip. Finish off your paperwork and head for the golf course. Kelly didn't give a rat's ass about golf or paperwork. His wife, Tildy, had planned birdwatching adventures for their retirement before the aneurysm ambushed her. He didn't mention the birdwatching to Jamison. Life was too short for that. Jamison was always the practical one. Forget the Carsons. How many times we've been down that road? Kelly wasn't likely to forget the Carsons, especially the day they were acquitted. Tildy had been an avid vocabulary builder. She might have called the Carsons' expressions jubilant amusement or subtly malevolent glee. Kelly knew by the cocky way they held their heads that they'd resurfaced to clean out another pensioner. Kelly had seen the impact on the victims as trials dragged on. He'd witnessed folks who'd expected a comfortable retirement and instead found shock, betrayal, and financial ruin. First hoodwinked by the criminals and then abandoned by the system. Kelly watched the juries get sucked in. The final victims he'd worked with hadn't lasted long after the trial. Massive coronary for him, dead before he hit the floor. 6 weeks later, a vial of sleeping pills and a bottle of Armagnac for her. Now those bastard Carsons were working his town again. Trouble was, what the hell could he do about it?
Willa was tickled to accept a dinner invitation from Cliff and Leanne. Dinner had been very sophisticated. Sushi, marinated salmon, baby bok choy. The chocolate souffle was to die for, she said with a soft sigh of pleasure. Leanne beamed. We were lucky to find this caterer. I love to eat, as you can probably tell by looking at me, but I hate to cook. Willa changed the subject politely. Such a lovely home. She marveled at the magazine-quality kitchen, admired the acres of dusky granite. Leanne raised a small crystal snifter. The place is way too big for us, being away so much, but we enjoy the space. Cliff said, can't take it with you, hun. True enough, but you should definitely enjoy life while you can, Willa agreed. Damn straight, Cliff topped up the Cointreau. Cliff and Leanne usually wintered in Antigua, although this year they were stuck home because of crucial business developments. Leanne missed the sunsets, but it would be worth it. There's always another sunset. These developments were huge, but extremely hush-hush. Afterwards, it would be Antigua every winter and then Provence for spring. Leanne and Cliff planned to keep their place in Nantucket for the summers, naturally. Willa would be invited to spend a month with them. Just pick the location. I do love to cook. When things are settled, I'll prepare a celebration dinner for you, Willa said. You aren't to wait on us. Give that hip a rest. It must be agony for you, bone on bone. Leanne shivered. Imagine needing a complete hip replacement. Let the little lady cook if she wants to, hon, Cliff said, but she may have to do it in Provence. Oh, you, Leanne said. They drove her home in the Cadillac, treated like minor royalty. You sure you're all right for groceries, Willa? Careful on those stairs, hon. Not since Molly and Arnold had she had so much fond attention. Willa hadn't expected to encounter that tall, thin policeman again. She'd been so touched to see him in his damp and rumpled raincoat at Arnold's funeral more than 2 years ago. Then again at Molly's a few months later, another appropriately dreary day. It had startled Willa to observe someone else so filled with pain. Sometimes she'd thought she was the only one. Of course I remember you, Detective Kelly.
You do? You look more rested since the trial. I wouldn't even have recognized you.
Willa smiled. Well, those were dark days. I've gained back a bit of weight. I've been working on getting better after... Her voice trailed off. It was still hard to say, after Molly and Arnold. And who wanted to hear about hip replacement? Detective Kelly, on the other hand, hadn't changed a bit. He still looked damp, although it wasn't raining. His suit was decent quality, although needing a press. He'd missed a trip to the barber. The cowlicks were taking over his salt-and-pepper crew cut. His hands were too big for his body, and tortoiseshell bifocals magnified the bags under his eyes. Even so, he just missed being good-looking, in a sad hound-dog way. He was a man who needed looking after.
Taking retirement, Miss Bennington, he said as Willa poured steaming Darjeeling into Wedgwood cups. Mandatory.
He was probably close to 60, a few years younger than Willa. Every now and then he fingered his worn gold wedding band. At Molly's funeral, he'd mentioned his wife had died a while back. Willa sat at the edge of the camelback sofa and leaned forward. Mandatory retirement. I think that will be a loss to the police.
Almost had them, you know, the Carsons.
At the time, you said it was practically impossible to get a conviction in fraud cases.
They're clever, these bastards. Pardon my language. They build trust, exploit greed. Works in court, too. Juries.
You almost have to admire them, exploiting greed.
He clanked his cup in the saucer. No, ma'am, you don't.
You're right. Molly and Arnold weren't greedy. Trusting, though. The betrayal did Arnold in. Then Molly, well...
Yes.
Surely if these Carsons are so clever, they could make a living honestly.
Indeed they could, but it's a game to them, winning over the victim. A vicious bit of play acting.
They certainly won Molly and Arnold. In my heart of hearts, I know that's why they died. Not just their money, but their lives stolen from them.
He said, the courts manage the odd conviction on the light side. Sometimes suspended. That kind of white-collar criminal usually gets community service. Nonviolent.
Willa pursed her lips. Seems to me there are different kinds of violence.
You don't have to convince me. Some do time, usually minimum security. They charm the prison officials, get parole out in no time.
But surely people are very gullible.
His eye flickered from the marquetry tables to the silky Persian carpet, past the Georgian silver candlesticks, before sliding back to her face. He drew her attention to the photos he'd brought to refresh her memory of the Carsons. The woman, tall, flamboyantly elegant, deep red hair in a French twist, and sharp blue eyes, cunning, but only in retrospect. The man, shiny bald with dark-rimmed glasses and a substantial mustache.
Don't worry, I could never forget the people who took Arnold and Molly from me, Willie said.
They're back. If you see them, get in touch. He handed Willa his card in the next 12 days.
It's going through! Leanne wrapped Willa in a huge hug and almost lifted her off the ground. What is? Willa swayed with shared excitement. The deal, the merger, our shares will vest the second we sign, Leanne squealed. Wonderful! Willa's heart fluttered at the news. I wish we could have let you invest, but a friend lost a considerable amount of money and we've made it a policy not to do business with friends. Willa's hand shot to her mouth. I certainly wasn't hinting. Please don't think that for a minute. And you're already very well off. Well, I'm all right, I guess. I have a fair-sized trust from my parents, what was left over after Daddy lost the business, and my teacher's pension, of course. We knew you'd understand, Leanne said. Willa said, I more than understand. I insist it's time for that celebration dinner. Oh, you're something, Leanne said. Isn't she, Cliff? Celebration dinner, pretty darn hard to turn down. I know my way around the kitchen, Willa said modestly. We'll bring the wine and the flowers, Leanne said. Don't argue with this little lady, Cliff added. Oh, you, Leanne chortled.
Kelly ran into Miss Bennington in the wine section of the liquor store. Her hair was different and she wore a bright coral scarf and gloves. She was glowing, or maybe she was just hot in that woolly coat.
She said, I'm picking up a special rosé for a celebration. I hope this one will do.
Tildy would have had a word or two for this new hair color, Kelly thought. Champagne, perhaps, or silver wheat, or possibly pale amber. How many men would even know such things? As usual, he felt grateful for the way Tildy had broadened his horizons. He blurted out, don't be offended, but you'd be a first-rate target for them. He'd never heard her laugh before. It was a good laugh, full and confident.
Don't worry about me, Detective Kelly. I'm a very good judge of character.
He wished he shared her confidence, but of course he knew better. These days you have to be careful.
She sighed. You know, I'm afraid that job of yours has stolen every bit of joy from your life.
Kelly could scarcely imagine the words joy and life together in a sentence. Yeah, well, for sure it can get a person down.
Then enjoy retirement. She reached forward and patted his hand, just a whisper of a touch.
He said a bit louder than he intended, promise me you'll call if... He watched her hurry off. He stood alone for 15 minutes, concentrating on that touch, before he lumbered over to Casey's bar for a solitary beer.
The dinner party was not to be. Willa found herself tearful and fighting for breath. The truth was, she couldn't bear anyone but Molly and Arnold at her table, not even Leanne and Cliff and her grand plan. She left a blurted apology on their answering machine. 2 days later, she did her best to convey regret and embarrassment in a handwritten note. She explained about the chronic pain from her hip and how it could overwhelm and depress her. She'd felt too humiliated to face them after their amazing generosity. Although she was unused to being furtive, Willa deposited the note in their mailbox and limped back to her car.
Some guys retired and headed straight for Florida, but Kelly could never leave the river behind. His childhood memories featured skinny dipping in the summers, pickup hockey in the winter, and later, stretching out with Tildy on the shaded bank when they were going steady. Kelly loved the spring thaw best. The crack of the ice slabs, the wild rush of water, the spray in the air, the smell of promises. Florida was only Florida. 2 days to go before retirement. Kelly staked out a riverside bench just across the pedestrian bridge from Main Street in the coffee shop he and Jameson and the guys had frequented for 35 years. He'd already noticed a couple of birds in the Manitoba maples by the shore.
Leanne was knocking, ringing, shouting, "Are you all right? Please, Willa." Leanne was persistent. Willa knew that from the messages on her answering machine. Later, she found a return note in her mailbox. "Darling Willa, don't worry about the dinner party. We will find many ways to spend time together. Once your hip gets fixed, you'll be like new again. Let us help. Please do not blame yourself. This has been a very difficult time. Much love, Leanne and Cliff." The next morning, Willa picked up the phone. Leanne and Cliff were joyous and forgiving. Nothing would do but dinner at Figueroa's. Their treat, and don't argue, little lady. "I'll meet you there," Willa said.
Kelly purchased a pair of Bushnell binoculars and the best pocket guide to birds of the Northeast. He selected waterproof boots and a hooded Gore-Tex jacket from the outfitters. He stationed himself on the bench by the river. Tildy had pictured the two of them rising before dawn to creep through the misty woods in search of rare birds. But Kelly couldn't see the point of the woods without Tildy's company. Since he knew maybe a dozen birds, it would be a while before he'd run out of local specimens. Already he'd spotted some starlings, a crow, and several flocks of bossy little sparrows. His first day of retirement was passing passably.
That evening, Willa arrived at Figueroa's wearing black silk and six strands of her grandmother's pearls. She dropped her beaded bag in surprise when she saw Leanne and Cliff. Leanne's deep brown eyes were rimmed in red, her mascara smudged, and her blush streaked with tear tracks. Cliff, wan and shocked, forgot to stand when Willa arrived. Luckily, they were tucked into one of Figueroa's high-backed, curved, and upholstered banquettes, famous places for striking deals. Leanne repaired her makeup discreetly. Cliff beckoned to the waiter to top up the Shiraz, although it did not appear that this would turn out to be a night of celebration after all. "Disaster!" Leanne ran her hand over her exhausted face when the waiter stepped away. Willa asked, "What happened?" Cliff said, "We have a small problem with our liquidity and a hostile bid from another party to take over the project." "For the sake of 5 days," Leanne moaned. Willa thought she would dissolve into tears again. "Gotta get a grip, hun," Cliff said. "Remember, easy come, easy go." "I'm not up on high finance, so I don't understand how that's possible." This time, Willa didn't worry about the tremor in her voice. Cliff said, "Well, hun, our bridge funding's threatened because the CEO of the company we're dealing with had a heart attack, and his people are insisting on time for due diligence. No one is taking chances in this economy. If we can't get everything settled before Monday, the competition can squeeze in our place." Leanne whispered, "It's like being robbed at gunpoint." "We've cashed out everything we can." Cliff patted his suitcase. He flipped it open, and Willa's eyes widened at the stack of bills. "But it's not enough. We don't have time to sell any of the properties." "Bastards," Willa spat. Leanne's square jaw dropped. Willa said, "It's true. I've heard about such people." Cliff said, "The thing is, unless Santa Claus brings us $500,000 before Friday, we're toast. We'll lose the $2 million we have invested." "There is no Santa." Leanne tipped the tail end of the Shiraz into Willa's glass. $500,000. Goodness," Willa said, taking a bigger gulp of wine than she was used to. "That's almost as much as I have to keep me going for the rest of my life, not counting the house, of course. The crazy thing is we have the money, tied up in the other company. Just can't get at it in time." Cliff hung his head. Leanne reached over and squeezed both his hands. Willa said, "Does it have to be cash?" "Afraid so," Cliff smiled sadly. Leanne's eyes were brimming again. "We still have each other, our health," Willa said. "Oh, yes, and we must never forget the value of love and friendship." Cliff hoisted his glass. "To friends." "Let me help you," Willa said. Leanne protested. "No, no, Willa, we're not looking for help. We're only crying on your sweet shoulder." Willa raised her hand firmly. "I can get my hands on some. Not 500,000, but maybe 3. Leanne hesitated. "Cliff, if we take a second mortgage on the house, combined with Willa's money, could we manage?" "No go, hun. Too risky for Willa." Willa said, "You put everything you have into it. Surely you wouldn't do that if you believed you were risking your future." Leanne said, "We'd never forgive ourselves if..." "What are the chances?" Willa raised her small pointed chin. "Infinitesimal, but..." Leanne wavered. Cliff interrupted, "Sorry, Willa, but we gotta say no. I insist. In my heart of hearts, I know it's right, and you are not to feel guilty. I will charge you one hell of an interest rate for the 4 days. It took the longest time to wear them down, especially Cliff. Willa tried various appeals over soup, a very good pear and squash with ginger, and the mahi-mahi with a fragrant, mysterious sauce. They finally agreed during the chocolate pâté with crème anglaise and raspberries. Willa decided to toast with Veuve Clicquot, her treat, a bit late in the proceedings, but Willa wouldn't take no for an answer on that either. When the cork popped and the flutes were filled, she raised her glass. Here's to the best of friends and the right outcome in the end.
His first post-retirement trip to the coffee shop would be his last, Kelly decided. Sure, the guys slapped him on the back as though they hadn't seen him 2 days earlier at his retirement party. Kelly wasn't sure what the backslapping was about, but a little went a long way, like the jovial kidding and the sideways glances. Tuldy would have called those glances furtive and cowardly, or passive-aggressive, or even subtly undermining. Jameson shrugged and said, "Things change when you leave the force." Tildy would have told Kelly he'd do better for companionship. He patted his Gore-Tex jacket pocket, just in case he'd forgotten the binoculars.
Willa telephoned Leanne and Cliff. "I've liquidated some investments, and I'm borrowing the rest through my bank. I'm using the house as collateral." The manager was quite inquisitive, but everything will be ready on Friday. "Long as you didn't let the cat out of the bag, this deal's confidential," Cliff said. "Don't worry. I told him I was buying a condo in Naples, a deal too good to pass up, and he'd better be quick or I'd switch my business. So now I want you to come here first for lunch on Friday." Leanne said, "Please don't stress yourself, Willa." "Indulge me," Willa said. "Nothing but clam chowder, fresh rolls, and a blueberry pie, and ice cream, naturally. I am so excited. I'll enjoy every minute." Cliff said, "We'll bring the wine, and drink it, too." "Oh, you." That was the signal that Leanne gave in.
Kelly decided to skip the coffee shop with the guys. His mind was on red-winged blackbirds. They might be common as dirt, but Kelly liked the flash of scarlet against their dark wings as they worked on their nests near the riverbank. Tildy had not cared much about trees, so Kelly didn't even know which type of tree. On the way back to the river, he stopped into Callahan's used books and bought A Beginner's Guide to Trees of North America. As he passed a sparkling black Cadillac parked in the front of the flower shop, he was astonished to see an unexpected female in the passenger seat. Kelly retreated behind a large tree and pulled out the bushnells. She may have gained 40 pounds and dyed her hair deep brown, but you couldn't miss the arrogant tilt of that Carson head. She lifted a large hand to tuck her hair behind her ear, and Kelly spotted the distinctive ring she'd worn leaving the courthouse. As the male half approached and slid into the car, Kelly figured the sandy hair for a toupee, or had the previous baldness been deliberate? Either way, it was amazing what the wrong people could do with a pack of Miss Clairol and a good rug. Jameson wasn't friendly when he picked up the phone to hear that the Carsons had been spotted. "We don't have a case. We don't have a complaint against them. They were acquitted the last time you tried. Now you're friggin' retired, Kelly. Suck it up."
Willa spent 20 minutes fussing over the table settings in the dining room. In part, it was an excuse to speak to the silver-framed photo of Arnold and Molly. "We were the best of friends, and I will never forget you." Shortly before Leanne and Cliff were due, Willa gently tucked Molly and Arnold into the top drawer of the mahogany sideboard. She straightened her spine and wiped her eyes. She finally had something to celebrate. Willa made lunch, humming away.
Kelly hoped to catch sight of the pileated woodpecker near the stand of what he now knew to be Old Hemlocks. He'd staked out the small bench at the end of Main Street overlooking the river. He sat in the middle, bird book on one side, tree book on the other. It was meant to discourage any talkers who might try to join him. Although with the icy late March wind blowing off the water, Kelly had the riverbank and the birds to himself. His battered Civic sat alone in the parking lot. He had added a notebook and pen to his equipment and was already up to 6 sightings that morning. He'd made notes about each. Sparrows, you could always count on them. He was starting to identify individual birds by the subtle difference in their brown markings. He spotted a pair of red-winged blackbirds, the female so much paler, a cluster of starlings with wing feathers like gas in a puddle, the regular crow, and a splendid seagull sailing along like a sea captain on a chunk of ice. The woodpecker would make 6 if it showed itself.
"Don't think I'm rude asking you to stay here," Willa said for the 3rd time, "but the less that nosy manager knows about my business, the better." Leanne said, "We're stuffed from that wonderful lunch you made. We couldn't move even if we wanted to." Cliff chuckled, "Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. As long as you don't mind waiting a bit, he's as pokey as he is snoopy." Leanne laughed. You'll be the one trotting along that freezing river walk while we sit in luxury, sipping coffee. Thank you for that, too. It's delicious, Vanilla Hazelnut Willis said modestly. Cliff took a sip. These stainless travel cups are dandy. You'll have to stop getting us gifts, little lady, Willis said. My pleasure. What an adventure. I can't believe I'm about to match your suitcase full of cash and be part of a hush-hush deal. It's like a movie. If you're having second thoughts, we'd survive, wouldn't we, Cliff? We sure would, hun. Willis' eyes sparkled. Not a chance I'll miss this opportunity. Oh, you, Leanne said.
Kelly had been late getting off to Sam's diner for lunch, and it was well into afternoon before he settled back into place on the bench, slipped his warm leather gloves on, and focused his bushnells. He was seeking a shy little singer he took to be a chickadee, when he realized with a spark of annoyance that his view was blocked by the glossy Cadillac, idling at the edge of the swollen river. Kelly considered alerting Jameson again when he was stunned to see Miss Bennington emerge from the back seat. She was unmistakable with her bright coral scarf and gloves and soft woolly coat. She carried a small black briefcase. Even from where he was sitting, she looked excited, perhaps even overheated. She glanced over her shoulder and limped up the hill toward the bridge to Main Street. Where was she going with that briefcase? It couldn't be easy. Her limp was worse than before. He hated to be the one to spoil her excitement, but what if she was headed to the bank? He ducked past the Cadillac and slouched down so the Carsons wouldn't spot him. He hurried up the path and across the bridge after her. At Main Street, Kelly stared around. The guys were right. Things changed. Less than a week into retirement and he'd lost his touch. Miss Bennington was nowhere to be seen. He strode along to the bank, pushed open the bank door, headed for the office, and instructed the goggle-eyed manager to stall if any client wanted to withdraw an unusually large amount. Kelly muttered about attempted fraud and innocent parties. He neglected to mention his retirement. Better that way. The manager assured Kelly he would be happy to comply. Still no sign of Miss Bennington. Kelly was out of breath when he returned to the Cadillac. Those bastard Carsons were sleeping, heads back, mouths open, polluting the air while they were at it. The car was unlocked, the windows down. Kelly yanked open the driver's door and reached in. He'd wake them up all right. He had nothing to lose by telling them to leave Willa Bennington the hell alone. He might save her from heartbreak and financial ruin, but what about the many others he would never know about? How could these people sleep with what they'd done, with people's deaths on their consciences? It was as though he was watching someone else's actions as his hand slipped forward and nudged the shift into drive. If the Carsons had opened their eyes, they would not have been any more astonished than Kelly himself. For someone wearing bright coral gloves and scarf, Miss Bennington was remarkably hard to spot. Kelly was back on Main Street for the second time when he finally located her leaving the jewelry store, swinging her briefcase, not a care in the world, heading back toward the river to meet the Carsons. When Kelly caught up with her on the bridge, it was too late. She pointed to the river wordlessly. The Cadillac bobbed in the river, swept along by the rough spring current. Kelly hadn't anticipated needing a cell phone for his birdwatching. Miss Bennington didn't have one either. She managed to keep pace with him as he hurried back toward the coffee shop to call 911, although there wasn't a hope in hell for the Carsons. When Kelly and Miss Bennington returned to the river, they spotted the glint of chrome from the rear. Then that, too, vanished beneath the choppy waves. Kelly attempted to speak to the emergency personnel at the site. Miss Bennington waited. No one paid attention to either of them. A has-been like him, a sweet little old lady like her. "Can you step away from the scene, sir?" A fresh-faced uniform said. "You too, ma'am." Kelly wanted to comfort her, tell her it was all for the best, but some things are truly best unsaid. Weeks later, Kelly left his Gore-Tex jacket and waterproof boots in Willa's front foyer. He made himself as comfortable as he could in the armchair across from her in the living room and accepted the Wedgwood cup with the steaming Darjeeling. He found he'd been hoping for that.
Willa sat on the camelback sofa, crossed her ankles, and listened intently. Double suicide! How astonishing! I must say, neither Cliff nor Leanne seemed in the least depressed.
Kelly stared at his faded navy socks. You can't always tell. That was the coroner's conclusion.
Do you think they suffered? Drowning must be a terrible way to go.
It appears they lost consciousness first. According to my contacts, they'd ingested a massive dose of oxycodone. I don't know if you're aware that's a powerful prescription widely used for chronic pain. They took more than enough to kill them each twice over.
Willis' brow furrowed. But if they were unconscious, how did the car get in the river?
Kelly found himself looking over to the silver-framed photo of Molly and Arnold. "Does it matter?" he said.
"I just don't understand how it could happen."
"Maybe it was part of their plan."
"So strange, that's all. They were sleeping, you said, and then the car just rolled into the river?"
Kelly met her eyes. "They were parked at the end, by the riverbank. They picked a spot with no guardrail. Perhaps that's what they intended. We'll never know. They left a note in her handwriting."
"Really? What did it say?"
Kelly said something like, "Please do not blame yourself. This has been a very difficult time for us. It is all too much. Much love, Leanne and Cliff." Kelly glanced over at her. "Perhaps the note was intended for you?"
Willis shrugged. "How sad. But why wasn't the note carried off by the water?"
"It was in the glove compartment in a plastic bag. They obviously wanted it to be found."
"They were facing terrible business problems, but I never thought things were that serious. Where would they get this drug?"
Kelly said, "The Carsons were criminals. Oxycodone is a painkiller, but it has become a popular street drug. They'd have no trouble finding it."
Her eyes met his again. "You kept warning me, but I never imagined Leanne and Cliff could... They didn't look anything like the Carsons."
"I could tell as soon as I saw them, but they were talented."
"But isn't it unusual for con artists to kill themselves?"
"Maybe some police force was closing in, other crooks breathing down their necks. They were scum, but maybe one of them was really depressed."
"I suppose."
"You weren't planning to lend them money? Bridge funding? An investment of any kind?"
"I didn't plan to help them." Willa pushed back a lock of champagne-colored hair. A splendid opal flanked with diamonds winked on her finger.
Detective Kelly found himself fascinated by it.
Willa stretched out her hand. "Lovely, isn't it? Did you know this was my friend Molly's engagement ring? I inherited her things, but this ring had been missing since before Arnold died. Luckily for me, it finally turned up. It was much too big for me. I had to have it resized."
"It suits you."
"Thank you for finding out what happened to Cliff and Leanne and letting me know. I guess I should say the Carsons. The other policemen seemed to think it was none of my business and I shouldn't stick my nose in."
"I'm retired. Nothing to do but birdwatch and stick my nose where it's not wanted."
"It was certainly wanted here."
"You're a very nice person." Kelly flushed as he spoke. He'd always been a bit hopeless.
"We have both been through a lot," Willa said.
"Birdwatching helps me. Perhaps you'd like to join me sometime."
Willis smiled. "I would like that very much. Since my hip replacement last year, I'm ready to embrace life. And after all, it appears we already have so much in common."
Kelly stared. "I suppose we do."
"More than you think. Speaking of birds, you must join me for dinner. I do a lovely Brome Lake duck, Shanghai style. Such a wonderful meal to share with only the best of friends."
Kelly raised his cup of Darjeeling awkwardly. "In that case... here's to the best of friends."
Willa leaned forward and clinked her Wedgwood cup against his, and to the best possible outcome.
So Much in Common is copyrighted by Mary Jane Maffini. The music for this podcast is Django Reinhardt's 1935 performance of his composition Blue Drag, acquired from the Internet Archive. Mixing and sound editing for the podcast were done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.